It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley are here. Hey, big, big news out of Microsoft. Where were you when you heard that Terry Myerson was out at Windows? We'll talk about that. When we're getting, it looks like we might be getting the new update on Windows, the big one, this Tuesday. We'll talk a little bit about that. And the skip ahead preview, which just came out. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 564, recorded Wednesday, April 4th, 2018. Windows demoted. Windows Weekly is brought to you by TurboTax Live, new from TurboTax. Now you can get a personal review of your tax return with a CPA or EA right on your screen. Talk live with a tax expert as often as you need for tax advice to help you file with confidence. Go to TurboTaxLive.com/Windows. And by WordPress, reach more customers when you build your website on WordPress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month and get 15% off any new plan at WordPress.com/Windows. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at RocketMortgage.com/Windows. Time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news. What are you laughing at? Microsoft? He's not. Don't act the way I said. Weekly. That's Paul Thurrott mocking
an odd
me.
Cadence. Is
yeah.
Odd.
Time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott's here from Thurrott.com, TheRrott.com. He covers Windows there and writes many, many books about Windows, including the Windows 10 Field Guide. Now, with Redstone 4.
That's true.
Mary Jo Foley is from allaboutmicrosoft.com, her ZDNet blog. She is officially off writing books.
Damn.
Not going to do it anymore.
I'll get her back.
Quiet week in Microsoft land. Not much to say. Yep. Nothing to do.
Well, there was a new RS5 build. It's kind of an Excel update somewhere in there.
Are they going to... are we going to patch Tuesday the new Windows? Is that what's going to happen?
I don't think they've said officially, but that's the running theory that next Tuesday would be the beginning
a week from
of the end.
Actually, next Tuesday. Yeah.
Yeah.
The beginning of the beginning of the end.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, in Redmond land.
Yeah, what happened?
Easy. Easy.
Meanwhile, I gotta, you know what I'm gonna do here? I gotta play a song. I gotta play a song because.
Uh-oh.
Is it The Best of Times by Styx?
No. You know that great TV show that begins at Fort Courage?
F-Troop.
No, it's not F Troop.
It's not F Troop?
This is better than F Troop.
No,
this
I don't
is the
know
one where
that.
They tear his patches off. What do you do when you're branded and you know you're a man? They're going to tear off his patches because he is being booted.
You are out of the Cub Scouts, mister.
Wow. That's Terry Myerson there with a big chin. They're tearing off his epaulets.
All but one man died.
Tearing off his buttons.
They're a bitter queen. And they say he ran away.
Actually, we give that uniform too. Can we have that back?
I like it when they break his sword.
It's really
all right.
Malicious, that's
yeah. When they kick you
that
out,
that actually
they kick
looks
you out.
Like Terry Myerson.
I know. It's kind of a. And then he walks out of the fort, all alone. And Google
fort.
Apple didn't even offer him a job. It's Fort Microsoft. Close the doors.
Fort Redstone.
Fort Redstone. He's gone. Yeah. Bye-bye. So,
is this battery on his shoulder, Chuck Connors?
No, that was a different guy. That was the Wild Wild West guy. with the battery on my shoulders. He was really pugnacious, that fella. I interviewed him once, and he almost beat me up. But that's another story for another day. Chuck Connors was an NFL star who later became a television star. Remember Rifleman?
Yeah.
But we digress. Quite a bit, as a matter of fact. The bigger story is Terry Myerson out at Microsoft. How long has he been? He's been at Microsoft for decades, but he was in charge of Windows since Sinofsky, right?
Right. Pretty much. Brief 1 year period when he was not. But
we forgot about Microsoft's version of the Gerald Ford presidency was stuck in there for a year or two.
So was this okay? Tell us the story of how you found this out, first of all.
Okay.
Because you broke this, right, Mary Jo? I mean, this was your story.
Well, I wouldn't say I broke it. I would say Microsoft timed it so that it would show up right after the memo went out to everybody inside the company. So, you know, the memo went out 10 a.m. East Coast time last Thursday, and then we could post our stories after that. So they called us and told us kind of the gist of it, and I was worried because I knew Paul was traveling that evening.
Yep.
And the next morning, I saw from his Twitter stream that he got into Colorado very late. And so I really sat there and debated back and forth if I should wake him up and tell him what we knew. But I decided not to.
If you don't mind me just interjecting quickly, Brad and Mahedi did the same thing. They knew. I told them, look, I'm going to be out for the duration. I don't care what happens. I'm not going to be available.
Really?
And well, we just had the busiest 8-hour back-to-back days. Plus we got in at 3 o'clock in the morning. So
You were tired.
But then, you know, I'm not that remote that I don't know what's going on. And so I see this stuff and I contacted Brad and I contacted Mary Jo and they told me what she just said. And I said to Mary Jo, you know, I got to say, you handled this a lot better than you did when Stephen Sinofsky left. Because that time I was driving a basketball and she called me screaming and I almost drove my car off the road into a telephone pole. But I distinctly remember thinking, like she was literally screaming. And I said, you know, I don't know where she lives. And if something's happening to her, I can't tell the police how to find her.
You guys are so cute. You know? You act like this stuff really matters. I love that about you.
Come on, man. It matters.
Does it? So why does it? Yeah. First of all, was he fired?
Okay, so here's, you know, Microsoft was very careful to make it look like this is an orderly transition and he's sticking around for a few months to help, you know, pass the baton, the whole thing, right? But you got to wonder how it actually happened. And my theory about what happened is they decided on a reorg structure where he no longer fit into the picture and they probably offered him some other things inside the company and he decided not to take them.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. So he's totally leaving.
They were of a lower level structurally, I think is
likely. I would assume. Right. So this is how it goes down. So Terry Myerson is going to be leaving within a couple of months. And immediately Microsoft is taking the Windows and Devices group and splitting it in two. So part of it is going under Rajesh Jha, who right now runs the Office business at Microsoft. And part of it is going under Scott Guthrie, who right now runs cloud and enterprise. They're creating these new groups, combining in the Windows people. So there's one that's going to be called Experiences and Devices. That's the one under Jha. And some of the people who reported to Myerson are going there, like Panos Panay is going there. Brad Anderson's going there. Kudo Sonoda's going there. So they're going in that part of the new org. And then under Guthrie, you're taking all the Windows engineering team and moving them in with server and Azure so that it's all people who are involved with Windows engineering together in one group.
Now, this is an annual rite of spring at Microsoft, right? I mean,
pretty much.
They reorg every year at this time. How is this different?
Oh, quite a bit different.
A couple ways. Yeah. For one, I would say a difference is that before they would kind of take teams wholesale and move them around. It's unusual that they're taking away a group that that has basically been the identity of Microsoft and kind of scattering it to the wind, as several people have described.
Wow.
It also is interesting, and I didn't really think about this. I forget who reported this first, but there's no longer someone who represents Windows on the senior leadership team at Microsoft for the first time.
Oh, that's interesting. So that's okay. Yeah. So some people use the term demotion,
right? Some people do.
Some people, like the guy right here.
Is that so? Really, that's where does, that comes from. It does sound like that, in the sense that Windows is no longer the crown jewel at Microsoft.
Hasn't been for some time.
For a while.
Yeah, and I think the weird thing about this, because it's funny, we've talked about this potential for a long, long time. You know, there was a time when Windows represented the largest chunk of revenues that Microsoft made. There was a time when Windows was number two behind Office. And then there was a time when Windows was number three behind Office and Server. Today, Windows represents 16% of Microsoft's revenues for the last fiscal year.
Really? Is that all? Wow.
Yeah. 10 years earlier, they were. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's what happens when you give it away, for one thing.
Well, because I went back and looked at their latest quarter after you and I talked yesterday, Paul. And
yeah. It's still a big.
It's still a lot of the company. I mean,
remember that org is more than just Windows, and
it is.
Yeah, but
part. I mean, it's called more personal computing, right? That's the group that Windows and devices is in, and so is Xbox, by the way, and MSN and Bing Ads. Those are all in this more personal computing. But last quarter, they had $12 billion in revenue. Office had $9 billion.
Yeah.
So it's not like they are really falling down, and you know, gaming isn't a huge piece of that, really.
But Windows is gaming's probably
it's growing more slowly. So I think a lot of what Microsoft did last week is twofold, right? It's they want people to see that they're focused on the future, and Windows isn't the future of the company, right?
Yep.
Cloud is, enterprise is. Not consumer, not devices, although devices are still going to be an important piece. But the other part is they're trying to, I don't know if I would say obscure Windows, but they're trying to make it so that it's not so obvious what's going on with Windows, which is it's becoming a smaller piece of the business, right?
But also I think they don't want people to point to it and say, hey, this thing's still doing pretty good. You're still overly reliant on the one piece of the puzzle, you're not moving into the future.
I
think they want to get rid of that, that problem, because then they look stodgy and old.
Right. It's like, hey, by the way, you're still making an awful lot of money from Windows, you know, Microsoft.
Well,
and that's important to remember, because I saw so many people saying, well, that's it. They're going to be like tossing Windows now, and like that's it for Windows. Windows is gone and it's over. No, Windows is going to be sticking around because they make a lot of money from Windows.
Things like the Titanic doesn't go down overnight. Whoops, yes it did. Well, I mean, these things happen slowly. Windows is humongous. There are literally billions of users of Windows, right? I think it's weird. You know, Windows in general is kind of a double-edged sword. Windows 10 in particular is a double-edged sword. It is a big audience in both cases, but it's not a very engaged audience, as I often say, you know, when you compare to people on mobile. Windows users don't tend to look for new apps in a store and get excited when new things happen. You know, they get upset when minor changes are made to the start menu and new versions and things like that. Like, you know, we're kind of settled in our ways. And this is pretty consistent, I would say, across desktop operating systems, too. It's not unique to Windows, but Windows is the biggest one. So, obviously, this is kind of a big thing. But, you know, Microsoft's attempts to bring mobile technologies into Windows has not gone well. I think it's one way to say it. But I would also say that really that this is just the latest in a long list of things that haven't gone well for Windows from a platform perspective. Microsoft has been losing the interest of developers, I would say, since Longhorn time frame. I mean, I think that I kind of pinpoint that as the start of this. But you know, whatever. So with Windows 10 specifically, there are things that happened that are good slash on point with what Microsoft wanted, meaning Windows as a service, whatever we think of that. And then this is laundry list of things that are really bad. And it's the kind of cheerleading nonsense, superficial baloney features that they've been adding to Windows the past couple of years, just to kind of make it seem like every release was a big release. And they just don't have anything else to point to. You know, they're not like Apple with iPhones and iOS. They're not like Android with new versions of Google with new versions of Android. This is what they have, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of hard to drum up a lot of excitement about something that's a tool we use for work, you know. And I think people like us who have been around for a while are vaguely resentful of emojis and, you know, sprinkles and, you know, whatever these other
stupid
things are.
Speak for yourself. I like the flipping hedgehog. Sorry.
That is my primary exposure to emojis, actually, is Mary Jo. That's true.
Flipping hedgehog? I don't believe I know that one.
You should get into our Skype conversations, Leo. It's a menagerie of animated animals.
I'm just trying to expose Paul to emoji.
He needs to know more about this. I agree. Yeah, he really does. He needs to
get in touch with my inner teenager.
Get in touch. Yep, exactly.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, okay.
But we should talk about Terry.
Okay.
Yep.
And okay. why I think we both think that, I mean, this is a big deal.
Right. Although, I'll tell you, when they called me to tell me about what was happening, the part that surprised me the least was that Terry was leaving.
Interesting.
And the reason is, and I said this to a couple of people, you know, if you look at Terry Myerson's tweets, especially lately, maybe over the past like 4 or 5 months, it's not the Terry we have known. He was tweeting much more politically correctly. Lots of kind of... We want to empower people to be more and do more, right? And I'm like, so I get that that's this company mantra now and stuff, but like that's not Terry, right? Terry is a political guy who is not known as the nicest guy. I actually like him, I should say. When Steven Sinofsky was leaving, I danced around my living room screaming. When I heard Terry was leaving, I felt kind of sad because I'm like, you know what? Yeah. He's a tough guy. He's not an easy guy. I've heard people tell some not so great stories about working with and for him that he's very hard to deal with. But I'm okay with dealing with people who are jerks.
We can't really repeat exactly kind of the way we phrased it privately, but sometimes you need the jerk. You know, sometimes the jerk is necessary. I will say, you know, I have spent between 8 and 10 hours on the phone since last week talking to people from Microsoft about what happened, and including 2 hours last night and an hour yesterday afternoon. Like, it just never ends. And I was walking around college campuses ignoring my daughter's future on Friday talking to someone from Microsoft. And I've heard stories, I guess, you know. And the funny thing is, the internal Terry, the political Terry, the infighter Terry is the Terry that I never knew. Right. I don't know that Terry. I think Terry's a great guy and I like him a lot. And I like what he's done for Windows. And I like that he went to bat for Windows. I like that he rose through the ranks for the Windows Phone team, which was exiled from Windows by Steven Sinofsky, to come back and take control of that group later. It was such a beautiful turnaround. And I enjoyed that. You don't get to this position in any company, especially a company like Microsoft, without being a certain personality type. You're not a wallflower. You're not afraid of fighting. You're maybe not above a little retribution from time to time, whatever. But
you know what? In the new Microsoft, that's not seen as okay, right? You're supposed to be not a know-it-all. You're supposed to be, I forget, what do they call it? Growth mindset, blah, 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 right? Okay. Yeah. From people who I have talked to who have worked for him and known him, that's not Terry, right? And I remember right after Steven Sinofsky left, one of the first things Microsoft did was let me talk to Terry Myerson, because I had been banned from talking to the Windows group under Steven Sinofsky.
We were literally
so
apologized to for that, you know, the behavior of the Windows team under Sinofsky.
Right.
Literally, they apologized.
Yeah, and I'm happy that he did it, that Terry Myerson said, sure, I'll talk to her. And, you know, it wasn't the smoothest interview. I mean, he's very, like, if you ask him something he thinks is dumb, he's going to be like, that's kind of dumb. Why are you asking me that? Like, he's not Mr. Smooth, you know?
Yeah.
But I respect somebody. I guess I grew up with a Microsoft where people were cantankerous, and I am used to that and okay with it.
I really like Terry. I don't know what to say. Like, I just like the guy. And I, you know, the one thing is, remember back in Windows Vista timeframe, you know, Longhorn was this thing that took forever to come to fruition. They eventually realized they couldn't finish it. It wasn't going to work. They started over. They came up with this little piece of dung in the corner called Windows Vista, and it was terrible. Fixing Windows Vista was very easy. Very easy. You know, you knew you had to make it faster. You knew you had to fix the driver situation. You basically pump out Windows Vista Service Pack 3 or whatever you want to call it. And you brand it as Windows 7. And that guy is like led around on people's shoulders like he's some kind of a hero. But the reality is that kind of thing to me was a simple engineering challenge. It wasn't a big deal. But if you flash forward to post Windows 8 and fixing that nightmare, you know, they did it in stages. Obviously, Windows 8.1 was kind of a step forward. Windows 8.1.1 or Windows 8.1 Update 1, whatever they were called it, where they brought the Start Menu back was another step forward. But Windows 10, to me, was this big apology to the PC user base. Like, you know, we did this touch-first nightmare thing. We're sorry. We're going to make this thing appropriate for you guys again, and we're going to focus on the desktop again. And I really, really appreciated that because I'm someone who uses a PC to get work done, and this stuff got in the way. And there's still little things in there. I mean, even the app platform today, you know, I was kind of complimenting OneNote Mobile, but one of the things I don't like about this app is that the buttons are still nice and big so you can hit them with your finger. And I'm not hitting them with my finger on this screen. I don't understand why they can't be a little more professional looking. You know, and so there's still those vestigial kind of leftover bits from Windows 8 in there. But I really, really thought that was kind of amazing. But as Mary Jo and I know from our sources, I would say, you know, Terry was tasked with a number of things from on high under Satya Nadella. And one of them was cleaning up his act. And one of them was making Windows fit into this new Microsoft worldview. And that new Microsoft worldview is that, and I think they were working toward this for a long time. I mean, I think this was the end goal. And I think Terry fought against a lot of it and eventually lost out. But the basic deal is that this thing needs to fit into a services scheme. If it doesn't, it doesn't have any place at Microsoft. And so there's a reason why this thing is updated as a service. There's a reason why it matches the update cadence of Office 365. Mm-hmm. These things are all rolled into one big offering called Microsoft 365. Right. And I think that was always going to be the end game here. Mm-hmm. That this thing doesn't have a role unless you do this.
Right. True. And so now we always say armchair quarterbacking, right? But like going back and thinking about when they announced Microsoft 365 last year, and I was kind of like, why? Like, this is kind of a weird bundle, you know, Windows and Office and EMS, right? Like, what? Why are they doing it like this? Now, flash forward, you can see like, this was kind of setting the stage for where they were going to go with Windows and kind of where they were going to go with management too, because the person running Microsoft 365 is Rajesh Jha. He's the guy who now runs part of Windows, Office 365, and Brad Anderson reports to him with EMS.
Yep.
So it's kind of like, now I get why they did that. That makes sense now, right?
Yeah, I can't remember who told me this. There was someone inside of Microsoft told me that when the initial release of Microsoft 365 was happening, Windows wasn't going to be part of it. And the intention was to add it over time or something. And
I remember you mentioned that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I can't remember. I'm sorry. I apologize. I don't remember.
I don't think you're supposed to say.
Yeah. Don't tell me on the air. but the the basic deal was, you know, that Terry or whatever, someone on the team found out about it and said, no, we have to be part of this. And he lobbied to make sure that Windows 10 wasn't left behind as part of that offering. And, Windows 10 in many ways makes the least sense, I guess, of all of the major components of this thing. There's nothing unique to Windows 10 added to Microsoft 365, at least not as originally envisioned. But I think that's because it wasn't originally part of the scheme. There's still a lot of political infighting going on, you know, in to some degree, obviously, in a company like Microsoft. So I'm sure that played a role in that. But anyway, The double-edged sword for Windows 10 that I mentioned earlier is that other things that Terry was tasked with was finding new ways to monetize Windows, right? That this the sacred cow, or the cash cow actually is the better term, that was Windows, was the licensing model, right? That they made X number of dollars every time a PC went out into the world with Windows on it. And at the time, for a couple of decades there, that was 90% of all of the personal computing devices that were sold to the world. Today, it's like 15%. And their model isn't working anymore. You know, that market is not growing. And, you know, as far as the percentage, you know, of revenues or whatever the exact number is, or however that works out, Windows is not a growth mindset. You know, it's just, and there's no way to kind of make it that. Although, but they've tried, right? So for the past couple of years, how can we monetize Windows post-license acquisition, right? Upsell people on OneDrive, put ads into the operating system, try to promote games. Apps more because, because we get 30% of all of that stuff. And none of it adds up to anything. And that goes back to that engaged user base thing I was talking about earlier. We just don't have that on Windows. It's just, you know, there are people using it for sure, but they're just not paying attention to that kind of thing.
But you know what's kind of funny? And that's an interesting point you're making about the monetization, right? Because some people would say, you know, we hear all the time on Twitter from people who are saying, if they had just made Windows free, everything would have been different. I don't think it would have.
Yeah, so.
I don't think it would have. And
there is a line.
Right now, one more thing before I forget. Yep. And right now, they're going the opposite way, right? Like you and Brad had that story. They're squeezing people with more expensive licenses of Windows. Like they're not suddenly saying, hey, we're going to make it free. They're making it more expensive.
You know, it's funny. There are these legacy kind of mindsets at Microsoft, and they're hard to sever. The big one was the thing they just did, though, right? They cut the head off of Windows. It's kind of amazing, but there's still these things that Microsoft collectively as a group cannot let go of. The consumer user base, for example, right? If you could you talk to anybody, people who are very credible, like Chris Capossela or Frank Shaw or anybody at Microsoft, they'll say the same thing. Like you can't divide these things in half. It's the same audience. We have to shoot for both. It's important. And I think part of it is a legacy mindset based, you know, from the 90s or whatever, when they were the king of everything and that it was consumer plus business. Microsoft came into business from the consumer side. Microsoft in the beginning, their business offerings were a joke. You know, they focused on workgroup computing at first and LAN manager and you know, they kind of moved up into the server world. They were like cute for a little while, you know, like they, until they became, now they're enterprise class. No, nobody doubts them. They're almost like IBM in that way. But
they don't want to be IBM, which is your point, right?
No, they don't, but they are. Inevitable.
I think they should just embrace this. Okay, you're a business company.
I agree with you. But the SKU thing, I think, is part of this. It's something they can't let go of. Because you could make this argument, you know, I've said the iPhone is the asteroid that killed the Windows dinosaur, right? And so Microsoft, just like everyone else in the industry, has to respond to the iPhone when it happens. And how do they respond? And the truth is everyone except for Google responded poorly. Google completely axed what they were doing and started over from scratch. Everyone else bumped into each other like a Three Stooges short or something. They had no idea what they were doing. Microsoft, you could say, well, you know, maybe they should have taken Windows Mobile or Windows Phone or whatever they had at the time and made it free. And they could have out Android. But the other half of that is, what would Microsoft gain by being Android, right? Android to Google is a vessel for ad sales. What would a free Windows Phone be a vessel for Microsoft? Like, what if Microsoft was the king of something that made no money? Like, why would that be a better outcome?
Maybe they could make money off of Office on it.
I mean, if Office is so good and so valuable and no one can say no to it, kind of shouldn't matter what the commodity operating system is underneath it, right? If it runs on Android, I mean, I don't know. I don't have the answers, but I do agree with what you said earlier. You said that, you know, had Microsoft just made it free or whatever, it wouldn't have made a difference. I think time schedules might have shifted a little bit or whatever. Things wouldn't have happened at exactly the same time. But I agree with you. Like not to mention the fact that the Microsoft of 2007, 2008, whatever year we're talking about, was incapable of making that decision.
Right.
They were still very much Windows. Windows is the center of everything. We can never make a decision that will harm Windows because Windows is the cash cow that we have, right? And, you know, we can second guess that decision all we want, but the truth is that company could never have made that decision.
True. Yep.
This was though written in the stars when Satya Nadella became CEO, right?
Okay, so Leo, maybe you would have some insight into this because yes, the answer is yes. But the thing I'm struggling with here, and I'm still literally a week later, I'm still struggling with this, is I've been talking about this for years. I have been saying that the future of Microsoft is in the cloud. They're heterogeneous.
You said in your notes, Ray Ozzie predicted this 8 years ago.
What was his reward for the little wake-up call that he gave to Microsoft? You know, like,
bye.
The Microsoft of Ray Ozzie's day was not going to be receptive.
It was too soon.
It was.
You had to see the writing on the wall. And so, this is always the problem with a company like Microsoft is you may know in your heart of hearts this is happening. But if your cash cow is Windows, you're not going to slaughter it.
Listen, I created a website called The Super Site for Windows. I have built a career over covering Windows.
Right.
I write books about Windows. I talk about Windows every week on the show. We have a podcast.
It's obvious if you look at how computers are used these days that the underlying operating system is no longer important. Right?
I think that's the real change. Yes, we need the maturity to understand that that stuff literally doesn't matter to almost anybody anymore.
No.
Right.
Anyone who is spending time on a computer tweaking things and, you know, looking at the latest feature in Windows Ink or something or whatever, making 3D models is fine, but just playing with it is not getting work done, you know? And there's a lot of it's surface level cheerleading baloney. Like, what are we getting excited about? If you look at the way Apple updates the Mac, by which I mean the software, I feel that they are more in tune with what is necessary for that kind of a product.
Today. But they're about to undergo, in my opinion, a sea change that is at least as dramatic as what Microsoft is.
Well, except but there's a big difference there. So Microsoft added a mobile platform that nobody wanted to Windows.
Right.
Apple has a mobile platform that everybody wants. And by the way, their mobile platform, unlike Microsoft's, has matured to the point where iPad apps could be on the Mac and would make sense.
And are going to be. There's no question.
But it will be fine, right? Apple, as the maker of that platform, can add mouse support.
Well, but they're going to deprecate Mac OS. I mean, what's going to happen is some hybrid. Yeah. But they're going to.
But that's what I mean. Like, they can. They're handling it correctly. With Microsoft, there is no mobile thing to go to. They've already screwed it up so many times.
Yeah, but I think I think Satya sees this and positions himself as we don't need to be the platform in terms of operating system. We need to be the platform in terms of the cloud. And then it doesn't matter. You work on all hardware.
I just wrote this story today. What I think of this is a shift from what we used to call the Windows experience to what I'm thinking of as the Microsoft experience.
I mean, who you point to in this is not Apple, it's Google. Google works everywhere. Google doesn't care. Right. Google's going to win no matter what platform you use.
Listen, how many years ago was it? It wasn't that many years ago. 3 years ago when they announced we're putting Office on the iPad.
Everybody freaked.
I mean, I think people had the vapors. There were fainting spells occurring. Like, this is crazy.
Right.
You know, since then, we've seen this embrace of Linux.
That was the harbinger. As soon as Nadella said, we're going to be everywhere our customers want us to be, you know, you can leave off that last sentence, but Windows will be the best experience now.
At first, he didn't leave off that sentence.
No, but that's because he understood the political environment.
Me too. Yep.
We can talk about how this is going to look. We're moving toward this world where Windows is not going to be as important anymore. And people, you know, anyway,
people will still use it. There'll still be a billion Windows users.
There will.
Sure. It just won't matter.
I know.
It just won't.
It will matter in business. It'll matter in business for quite a while.
Maybe. Maybe. We use QuickBooks online. QuickBooks online works no matter what you're using.
Yeah, I think, but it's interesting that the web, which, you know, remember Mark Andreessen, the Windows is a set of poorly debugged device drivers on which our software, whatever. It's funny that 25, 30 years later, whatever we are at now, that is coming around.
The future is already here. It's just not evenly distributed. I mean, that's obvious that the seeds of this have been here for decades, but this is starting to happen now.
Yeah, the thing that's kind of holding it from totally happening is line of business apps, right? Like there are still things that only work on Windows.
Yeah, but
right?
watch and, it build as Microsoft pushes people to develop for a cross-platform world.
Yeah, for sure.
Right?
For sure.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
If you're Mr. Windows, way, you don't say that. You say develop for Windows. It's the best experience. It's the platform business wants to use. That's not what – it doesn't seem to me that's what they're saying these days.
No, it's not what they're saying, but it's the reality they're still in.
Yeah, this is always the problem. This is the innovator's dilemma, is that how do you move to a new business model when the old business model is so lucrative and is what you're living on? And it's not, it's a transition that's very difficult. It's killed a lot of companies. Mm-hmm. And I think, I have to say, since Satya Nadella came along, Microsoft has really done a good job, it seems to me, of repositioning itself. It also seems that way to the stock market. Look at their stock price.
Yes.
Yeah, it's hard for me because, their stock has been on a near constant upward trajectory since he took over.
I think that's the market's recognition of what this is happening.
Well, but the revenues and profits have gone up as well. We talked about that at the last quarterly earnings. I mean, they were at a very comfortable level, plus or minus a few billion for many years. And then all of a sudden that has changed.
Shouldn't give credit to the stock market for understanding anything.
No. The stock market is absolutely a huge part of it. Listen, under Steve Ballmer, Microsoft stock was a straight line.
Yeah.
It didn't go anywhere.
Completely flatlined. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was always a baffling mystery to everybody because.
But what do you, but how do you explain this? In other words, I feel like I was on top of this. We were collectively on top of this. I've been sort of preaching this as the future for a while now. I've been criticized heavily for this in certain quarters because, you know, people still feel very strongly about their little pet projects or whatever. And then it happens and it's still kind of devastating. And I can't quite put my finger on
why.
Imagine
how the buggy whip manufacturers felt.
Right.
I've never felt this crappy about
being right.
No, you know, Paul, those past few days, I've been watching Paul on Twitter kind of go through the stages of grief.
Aww.
And today he was in resignation and acceptance. He was.
Resignation.
But the real question, and I think maybe Microsoft has already answered this, is can you be as successful not selling software, but selling
can
services?
Who's you? You mean Microsoft.
Can one be?
Yeah. So by the way, that's been top of mind in a couple of people I talked to this past week, including last night. And the general feeling is probably not, actually.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the margins are very different.
The poster boy for this is Kodak. Everybody knew. They saw the online future coming. They saw the digital photography future coming. They made the first digital cameras. They bought Ophoto. They did everything. Sure. But the problem was very simple, was the profit margins in developing and film are much better than they are in digital.
Yes,
And so it couldn't survive, even though they knew what was happening.
Every quarter when Microsoft releases their earnings, you can go back and look this up. I complain every time about the way that they hide the real numbers. And the big one with the cloud stuff is that they talk about, what do they call it? The commercial cloud, I think is the name of it.
Commercial cloud. Yeah.
It's not a thing. It's not a thing.
No.
It's not a business that exists. It's not even a collection of three businesses you can point to and say these things collectively are the commercial cloud. They pull stuff out of different places in a haphazard fashion, which we have no way of measuring, to determine this nebulous thing that doesn't exist called the commercial cloud. And then they don't tell you how much it made. They tell you how much
it grew. But they tell you what percentage it grew by, which doesn't help because you don't know what the base is.
So here's the thing. If you were looking for, you know, Azure, let's say, or just the cloud is the future of Microsoft, and you want to put a number on that and be able to understand the point at which it turned into a truly viable and incredible business for Microsoft, that day will be the day they stop doing that kind of baloney. And I don't think they're going to stop doing it.
No.
Like Leo said, this is a transition. And how do you manage the transition? Giving accounting laws, they're doing everything they can to manage it on the financial side by not being transparent about where the money is. And that will continue because they don't want people to understand that maybe, because I really have no idea, that the emperor has no clothes.
Well, that's a juggling act because you can't afford to lose your value on the stock market because that's how you acquire engineers.
Well, and you don't want to lose the faith of your customer base.
And you don't want your customers to abandon you. Yeah.
Yeah. Microsoft is talking digital transformation.
I want to take a little break.
A
I want to ask a couple of questions. And one of the things that comes to mind, which I don't think you address in your show notes, is what does this mean for the PC industry?
Right.
Like, how does this affect Dell? Just, you know, announced their spring line of Windows based, Intel based computers. But both Microsoft and Intel seem to be drifting away.
Okay.
So what does this mean?
I do have some inside baseball in the Intel Microsoft thing that might be of interest.
I want to talk about it. First, though, I have some bad news. April 17th is on its way. It's just a few, it's 2 weeks away. You know what that means? Tax time. You gotta do your taxes. And if you've been putting it off, I have some good news for you. TurboTax is still there. And you know, one of the reasons I've been putting it off, I'm right in this boat because I have to do my mom's taxes. She just text messaged me, "Where are my vouchers?" Because she pays quarterly. "Where are my vouchers? And Mom, I haven't done the taxes yet." And I don't want to say that because she'll freak out. But tomorrow I'm gonna get on Skype with her and I'm gonna finish the taxes. And the thing is, I have some confidence because I've done this for her before. And TurboTax, it's literally, you know, 15 minutes because I can import all the data I need from her stock market accounts, her investment accounts, from everything just goes right in. Whoop, whoop, whoop. It's actually kind of pleasurable. I know this is a strange thing to say, pleasurable. Maybe that's because she writes the check. I just do the taxes. But it's kind of satisfying when you fire up TurboTax and it just kind of all happens. And all that, you don't have to do the calculator. You don't have to do the spreadsheet. It just, it's so beautiful. Imports all the data from last year's. And there's something new with TurboTax I love, TurboTax Live. And I'm going to use this with her because the hardest thing about doing mom's taxes is Mom being nervous. She's 85 years old. She's nervous and she has lots of questions and they keep coming. TurboTax Live is going to be great because with TurboTax Live, you get a personal review of your tax return, not with me, her son, who she doesn't trust, but with a CPA or an enrolled agent, someone trained in taxes. They're right there on the screen. She could talk to them. It's one-way video, by the way. I love that. So they won't see her, but she can see them. She can go back to the first. There's two things you can do. You can go back to them as often as you need for answers and advice on your taxes. And I think with the new tax law coming in, the advice for next year is going to be really important too. What tax planning do I need to do for the 2018 taxes? And you can also, the second thing you can do is have the expert review your form, your returns before you file, and make any necessary changes. And just give you the reassurance. In most cases, there won't be changes. Give you the reassurance that you did it right, or ask a question. Well, did you include, you know, carried forward interest or whatever the complicated thing? And you go, oh, and that is so nice. And it's all backed, as always, with TurboTax's 100% accuracy guarantee. So you'll file with complete confidence. And it actually makes tax time fun and satisfying, right up to the point where you actually have to write a check to the IRS. But that's another matter. They can't help you with that. TurboTax Live. .com/windows. Connect with a TurboTax Live expert today. TurboTaxLive.com/windows. If you've put it off, I don't blame you, but I just want to tell you it's going to be easy and it's actually going to be fun. And you're going to, at the end of the day, you're going to say, yeah, I did a good job and I got expert advice and I feel good about it. I think that's nice to know. TurboTaxLive.com/windows, a brand new service from TurboTax. You can bet I'll be using it this year as I do every year, and I encourage you to do it too. TurboTaxLive.com/windows. We thank them for their support of Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. We are talking about the end of the world as we know it.
Yep.
So if you're an OEM, presumably Microsoft made a painful call to the OEMs at some point.
Well,
maybe it doesn't affect
No.
You.
Microsoft continues investing in Windows, right? I'm sorry.
You're not worried about it. It doesn't mean Microsoft's leaving Windows.
In fact, the person who's in charge of OEM ODM relationships, Roanne Soames, she's staying, and she's just going to be working under Jason Zander.
You don't start doing more Chromebooks.
As a PC maker?
Yeah.
Look, those guys have all the data they need to know whether they want to make more of those or not. And I think they've seen the level of success they're going to see. You know,
and it's not like there's another thing you can go get and do. You can't. Yeah, there's no BOS out there waiting for you to.
No, honestly,
people still need computers. They just.
They do.
Yeah. So you focus on what they have been focusing on, which is new
There's been success in the PC industry over the past couple of years selling premium PCs and gaming PCs, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, part of the internal documentation that we saw earlier this year was about a Microsoft initiative to bring that level of success to mainstream PCs, right? What can we do to bring these advanced Windows 10 features down to less expensive computers so that more people can benefit and we can drive growth there as well. I don't know what these changes have done to those plans, but as Mary Jo alluded to earlier, they are in fact riding the SKU train thing again, where we're going to charge more to OEMs for more expensive full featured versions of each product edition, right? So, I mean, it's hard to say right now. Build's going to come. They are going to talk about new features coming in the next version of Windows 10. The Windows 10 investment continues. I don't think at the level that it was at before. I mean, I think it's going to be more commensurate. That's one of the big things under Satya Nadella, right, that these businesses all have to kind of justify their existence. You know, Windows is a huge organization, and there's great waste there as far as just the sheer number of people working on things that don't matter. And I think we can expect that to change. You know, that's going to be part of it, too. Windows needs to be a smaller organization.
Yeah. That is going to be interesting because right now there were no layoffs as part of this reorg. But, you know, there were 5,000 or so people working on Windows under Terry Myerson. And now they're going to Jason Zander. So it'll be interesting to see if all those positions remain or if some people get reassigned and some people let go.
It's going to be like the Office Space movie where the Bobs come in and they ask everybody what they do. And it's like, so you've been working on the shell for 12 years. What exactly has happened to the shell over 12 years? Nothing? Okay. So, maybe we could make a change. I think we're going to see stuff like that for sure.
Although, we didn't even talk about the shell. So who's in charge of the shell? Joe Belfiore. Joe Belfiore is going to work for Rajesh Jha as part of that org. And his mission is still the same stuff. It's the shell. It's the cross-platform experiences, like, pick up where you left off, all that kind of stuff. That's all still under him. Probably these new and Polaris kinds of experiences, this Windows Core thing with the shells that fit in, composable shells, that must still be under him also. So
I worry about Joe.
Some things aren't changing,
to be honest. Well, some things aren't changing. We don't know. I mean, they've kind of laid out this organization. The truth is, these guys are the people in charge of these new teams and groups are going to start talking to the new people under them, and they're going to talk to the teams next to them, and they're going to figure things out. And some people are going to identify great areas that they think have future promise, and some are going to identify great areas that are just a complete waste of time and space. And how did this last so long? Someone was being quiet over there in the corner. It's going to be an interesting thing. And so, but even by the time of Build, the people in charge of things will not have a complete picture, I don't think, of what's going to happen going forward. So this is something that evolves over time. We'll see. I'm really interested to see how they position this stuff at Build. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure they'll put a very positive face on everything. I've been a little mixed on the Windows 10 thing for a while. I feel like they've gone off in these bizarre directions, and I don't quite understand why. So maybe that gets reined in, hopefully. But Leah had asked about Intel. And I've told the story many times because I love it so much. But years ago, a friend of mine from Microsoft was talking then about the relationship that Microsoft had with Dell and how terrible they were and how terrible both companies were to each other. And the way he described it was that these two companies deserve each other. And I feel like in Microsoft's case, there are a lot of examples of that kind of thing. And when you think about companies like Intel and Microsoft, those two companies deserve each other. Microsoft there's only one other company in the PC industry that's peeling away profits, and it's Intel. And I think part of the deal with Qualcomm was trying to put some stress on Intel so that they have to lower prices and also improve their products in ways that are good for mobile and for mainstream computing. And I Qualcomm Windows 10 on ARM only exists to screw over Intel. There's no doubt about it. And yet, there's no doubt.
And Apple's doing the same thing, according to the rumors. Yeah. They're gonna ban Intel in a couple of years.
Apple doing it makes even more sense because core to Apple's strategy is partner with other companies only when you have to, and then wait for that day when you can screw those people over and just do it yourself. This is classic Apple. The microprocessors thing is kind of a weird thing because 10 years ago, the notion of Apple making their own microprocessors was ludicrous. Today, it's not just plausible. It's only a matter of time that they're going to replace Intel. So that makes sense. Microsoft doing it, they're in a different position. They have to partner with companies on microprocessors. They can't just dump Intel. The Qualcomm thing has to make sense, right? I'd say right today, right now, it doesn't really make sense, kind of a mainstream.
Now that we've used these Windows on ARM computers, I think we can safely say they're not a competitor.
Well, you know, Microsoft wants very badly, for some reason, for Windows to transform into this mobile platform. That's what Windows RT was about. That's what Continuum Windows Phone is about. That's what Windows 10S and S Mode is about. It's what Windows 10 on ARM is about. And it's, you know, just taking this gigantic star destroyer of an operating system and turning it into this streamlined little thing is possibly impossible. It just doesn't seem to make sense to me. But
I think they know they need a mobile play. They have to have one, and they just can't figure out what it is. Right.
But that's why I thought you abandon Windows. The mobile play is you be a cloud platform. You don't worry about mobile OS.
I think we're gonna get there. I think Windows is headed toward thin client land. Yeah, I think this mobile streamlined thing is gonna happen. But the Intel for the short term is in a good position because they serve the part of the market that is making money for PCs, which is premium PCs, gaming PCs, high-end PCs. They just released these 6-core Core i9 processors for laptops, and those are all premium, expensive computers. This is a market that Qualcomm can never compete with. I don't mean never, ever, ever, but for foreseeable future, never.
And by the way, so HoloLens, mixed reality, is going to drive that as well, right?
Drive
Intel. You need those. I mean, I know you'd like to do it on ARM, but.
Well, funny you say that because right now on Windows Central, a story just went up saying there's a rumor that the next HoloLens will be ARM-based.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Oh boy!
Yeah,
yeah.
I think Intel is going to weather this. Frankly, I mean, I'd rather have 8 times the performance and 2/3 the battery life. If that's the math, I mean, whatever. You know, I think Intel's going to do fine. Although I did just bring up an Intel-based laptop last night. It was amused at how much it was hissing like a cobra during the entire Windows setup process, which is always irritating. So I don't know anything about Intel's perspective on Microsoft. I'm sure they hate them just as much. But Microsoft, they can't stand Intel. They're stuck with Intel. It's like a bad marriage. You know, they just can't.
It has always been that way, though. It's hysterical.
Yeah, they're stuck.
It's been there for a really long time. I remember interviewing Andy Grove, and he was so pissed off at Microsoft and 32-bit. And we're making 32-bit processors. They're still making a 16-bit operating system. That's how long ago that was.
Yeah.
And that's always.
Yeah. I mean, that guy wasn't he a Nazi concentration camp survivor?
Hungary. He escaped Hungary, crawled under barbed wire fences to come to America because Hungary, was being suppressed by the Soviets. Remember in 1956?
Okay. Oh, so it's like okay. So Microsoft was still probably the worst thing that ever happened to him.
His book was called "Only the Paranoid Survive."
Yeah.
But I think that Intel really has brought this on themselves. They really got lucky after Itanium, which now sounds like a comic book character. They really got lucky because they had this Israeli skunk works that kept x86 alive. But that was years ago. And frankly, I'm underwhelmed by it. Intel can't get 10 nanometer working. They're really struggling. They're not innovating. Well, and so I understand Apple's looking at them saying, well, screw you. We don't need you anymore.
The Intel 10-nanometer thing, I think, is an example of what happens when you don't have any competition, right? So Intel will only drive as hard as they have to. If AMD was offering up any form of competition in this space, they would show up. And so you can see what they've done. Like AMD showed up with, oh, look, we've got this low-cost, high-performance stuff, Ryzen and so forth. Mm. And what did Intel do? They started piling on the cores because they can turn the spigot on at any time. If ARM proved to be a viable competitor to them in the mobile side of the Windows world or whatever, I think you'd be surprised. that it's
they could
kinda,
do it. Yeah, that's interesting.
They could.
Yeah.
They just don't have to. They don't.
Right. And that makes sense.
This is Microsoft with IE6. You know, like, what do you expect from a company that has no competition?
Right.
You know, it's
right.
They're not going to try hard.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting approach, which is to say, we're just going to go at the high end. And we'll own the high end. Yeah. And if you want a slow processor, you can get an ARM processor. But
years ago, when this kind of convergence stuff first started happening, this notion of you can have a tablet that splits off from a keyboard and it's kind of like two different devices in one or whatever. And later on, we had, phones that could turn into computers and stuff. And we'll have like one device that does everything, like everyone else and like especially everyone in our industry. I kind of experiment with all this stuff. And I wrote an editorial, which I'm just going to rewrite probably this week, which is just called The Right Tool for the Job. And I feel very strongly that different devices are good at different things, and I don't like the compromises of using them to do other things. And so one of the nice things for me, as we offload a lot of this kind of consumption activity to phones and tablets, is that the PC returns to its pure form of just being a work device. It's the thing and the goofy thing is I don't need a lot of stuff on there to get work done. This is even more true of Mary Jo, who basically consists of Skype and Notepad or something, and a web browser, but it's really interesting that as professional writers or whatever, right, the sophistication of the tools we need is actually not all that great. Right. And a lot of the goofy stuff that I used to waste time and effort putting on a computer, movies I could watch on a flight or music I could sync to my Zune or whatever the baloney was I was doing at the time, just goes away because all the stuff's on a phone now. I can watch TV shows and movies on my little iPad. I do social media and all my other stuff on my phone. And when I open that laptop, it's work. It's all there are distractions because I have idiot friends on Skype. But I mean, there are no social media, blah blah blah, whatever. I'm not playing games. I'm not doing any. I'm working. That's what it's for. And I like that. That may not be a great business for the companies that make these products. I don't know, but for me, it's great.
No, and that's where Microsoft gets in trouble with the, consumers are all also workers and vice versa. There's no split, right? Because what you're talking about is a split, right? And so the consumer device is the mobile device, which they don't have. And the work device is your PC.
It's also the societal issue of, you could work for, I tried to make some social commentary when I was in Colorado. I went into the men's room with a laptop and of course now you have to do something with a laptop. So I put it up behind the urinal and I'm like, I'm going to take a picture of this. And I took a picture and I said, see, you really can work from anywhere. And everyone's like, oh, that's gross.
Disgusting.
But hey, I got some serious work done. It was great. No, but the entire notion that we can work from anywhere is somehow like a benefit, right? It is in some ways, obviously. But the side effect of that, which is a net positive for our employers, not for us, is that we're available anywhere. I can be out of my daughter's college thing and I'm interrupted by work stuff. And I frankly wasted a lot of time on work stuff because it was very distracting. And there are negatives to it as well. And, like I said, with the laptop, there's kind of a nice division. When I'm out in the world with my phone, yeah, I can get email and you can bug me on Skype and stuff like that. But the truth is I'm taking photos and I'm drinking and I'm eating. And that's maybe the way it should be, that it's like personal. I am an employee and I work, but I'm a human being and I play. Sometimes those things do mix, but I don't know. I feel like we've gone too far in that direction of mixing work and home.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for those thoughtful words.
Thank you for the urinal story, which
I'm glad we heard that today.
Yeah, inspiring. Yeah,
inspiring. Mm-hmm.
Inspiring.
Yep.
So, Windows doesn't go away.
Don't have to touch it.
Windows doesn't go away. But maybe they don't make any. Well, and they still make money on it, right? They're going to charge.
Well, remember, Windows is essentially a subscription service, right? And so, as long as the enterprise
need something
is
to run on that hardware,
it doesn't go away. But I guess the point is, how much innovation, for lack of a better term, do we need on these things? And then there's the whole issue of this Windows as a service deal and the schedule.
Would users complain if you stopped adding features to Windows? Mm-hmm. Would users complain?
I think they would like it. I think some of them would love.
They're not upgrading anyway. They're not getting any new features. They don't want new features.
Right.
They want stuff to change and not to break.
No, there's a group of people who want them, right? There are people who are in the Insider program. They want to have new features
in
Windows.
That's a million people, not a billion people.
It's some number of millions, but it's absolutely not some number of billions. Right. And that's, I think, is the issue, because you get this vocal, enthusiastic minority who's driving the direction of a product that they literally don't represent the user base of. And it actually is a huge problem.
But you know what?
Because they're the only ones feedback hubbing anything, right?
Right.
It's
right.
Like that Windows 7. I designed Windows 7 is like the robot breathing fire. That's the Windows Insider.
This is a perennial problem in the software industry. It's why the Norton antivirus checkbox got longer and longer and longer, because they wanted those checkboxes in the PC Magazine reviews. Users weren't necessarily demanding it, but they did when they get to the store. They looked at the checkbox and said, well, this has more checks. So this is a perennial problem. This is what causes bloatware. You know what users do want, though? Interestingly, I think they want their services improved. I think they want, for instance, Cortana to get smarter.
Yeah.
That's what
they
want.
Take a step back and just fix things. Like, I think at some point you become so inclusive, you create a product that isn't perfect for anybody. Mm. You know, everyone gets a voice. Yeah. You know,
I know.
That's
always been the problem with Windows, because you have, it's not like just a small finite group of people who all have this shared common set of interests. It's like a billion plus people in the world who use it so differently. Right. Like what somebody wants in a business to be done with Windows is the opposite of what somebody who, you know, wants the latest emoji on Windows.
Well, who should get the vote there? The 2/3 of the population that are in business, or the 1/3 of the population that is not in business, or the 1-point-something% that's in the Insider program? Where's the direction coming from? It's coming from that little group down there at the bottom. It's not coming from, I'm not dumping on Microsoft here. They did create an Insider program for business. I would imagine that the rate of usage there is very small, right? Because businesses don't even want to think about things that are going to change. It's one that we're not changing anything. Don't do it. Yeah. I think is their attitude. That's how I see it.
Yeah. They're serving a lot of masters here, and you can never make everybody happy, of course. But
yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what the solution is.
Is hardware still important for Microsoft?
So, we should talk about Panos, right?
Where does Surface play in this?
Mm-hmm. Right. So Panos is going to work under Rajesh Jha. He's now Chief Product Officer, CPO. I think the P stands for pumped, actually, not product. But not you never know. Panos Pumped Panay is now Chief Product Officer. And so that's where Surface sits now. And why is it there? It's because it's part of the whole Microsoft 365 strategy. So what Surface really is a Microsoft 365 powered device. That's going to be its future going forward. So Surface is going to be the best platform for Windows 10, Office 365, and EMS together, preloaded on these devices. And that's kind of where that's going.
You know, you could take it even a step further and say that, like other devices, Surface adopted a smartphone licensing model where you could basically subscribe to the device and pay for it over time. Imagine a situation in which you rolled the payments for Surface device into a Microsoft 365 subscription.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of makes Microsoft 365 as an entity even make more sense, because now it includes the hardware element as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And, they talked to us the last time we met with Panos here in New York about how these days, the way they design new Surface devices is the Surface team is in a room with Windows and Office, and they're all talking together when they're building these things, saying, okay, how can we make this feature in Office light up on this device?
That's kind of a Willy Wonka-ish view of how things happen over at Microsoft.
I don't know. I kind of feel like it does happen.
They're passing around like a peace pipe or something? And
no, but like, okay, here's an example. The next Surface Hub, right? Okay, how are they going to come up with what features they want that thing to have? They're going to look at Office 365 and Skype, and they're going to be like, okay, We want this feature to show up. We want Teams to be the centerpiece of this. Okay, so how do we build the device to make Teams be the middle? I think that's what they're really doing.
You just literally did all the work you needed to do to come up with that product. I think, you know, it's like, are we done here? Are we going to go get some beer? What, you know, it's not a big conversation to be had. Anyway, it's fine. But, you know, I happen to like Surface devices. I think they're high quality. They clearly don't sell very well. I think there's a bigger business maybe to be had there. I don't have any solutions to that. I thought the devices they released last year would do well better than they did. They're getting to be generations behind on certain technologies, right? Obviously Thunderbolt 3, but also the Intel processors. They only have one Surface model, one Surface mm-hmm. device that has the latest Intel processors, and they just ship 6-core versions, which they also don't support yet. So I'd like to see that stuff move more quickly. I wrote something today where I sort of theorized about it, and again, this is not based on any insider information, but you know that maybe this next hybrid thing, this new form factor they come out, maybe it's time for Microsoft to look into Android as a potential base for this stuff, because that Microsoft experience thing I was talking about, when you no longer rely on Windows, could make a lot more sense since it won't be hobbled by a terrible app platform like we had on Windows. Mm-hmm. You know, if it was a phone class device, it would be low risk, low cost for Microsoft. It would be low risk, at least for customers, because it's an Android phone. So if all the Microsoft hoo-ha didn't work out for you, you can still run Android apps. It'd be fine. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it's the next billion dollar business.
Yeah, but. I know. I actually don't think that's so crazy, even though like even a year ago, that would have been crazy. But I also think you have to say, okay, you know, does it make sense for them to get back into the phone business if they don't have something that's a unique value proposition? Like if they're just another Android phone.
They could do the Continuum thing. I think they could. Yeah. Just having an Android phone that had the Microsoft launcher and lock screen and keyboard and services mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff, not just pre-installed, but up front and center. Mm-hmm. That's the Microsoft experience on a phone. You know, it gives them that Continuum of devices again. Yeah. As a standalone business, it's nothing. But as part of Surface, I think it could help a lot.
Maybe. The other thing that didn't get touched in this reorg, which is very interesting, is gaming. So Phil Spencer continues to run gaming. He continues to sit on the senior leadership team. So Xbox and Xbox Live and all the gaming studios, those all still just remain a separate standalone business.
And I think that's what Xbox needs to be, is a top-level standalone Xbox / gaming business. And I bet they get there. The Xbox is in some vague way based on Windows 10 is completely uninteresting and pointless to anyone who uses either of those devices. Like, it just doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. They need to be their own thing. And and maybe, you know, we keep coming back to this every couple of years. You know, maybe they should literally be their own thing. Maybe Xbox should be spun off or whatever. But I like what they've done. I mean, I like some of the PC integration stuff. I think being inclusive with Windows 10 was smart for both sides of the fence. It kind of benefited everybody. And it, most important, it benefited the customers. You know, it was a good move for everybody. But I don't know. There's no real synergy between Windows 10 and Xbox that I can see. I mean, I sort of feel like this should be a separate thing.
I mean, except for cross-platform gaming, right? I mean, that's the one.
Yeah, but there's no reason. There's no reason that has to stop. I mean, it's they can. I don't know.
Yeah, you mean it doesn't have to be one Windows in that case?
Yeah, you know, the Xbox software, the Xbox services that are in Windows could still come from Xbox. You know, the Cortana stuff in Windows doesn't come from Windows; it comes from a different part of the company. I mean, Windows can still take on the best of Microsoft. Mm-hmm.
True. Oh, and we also didn't mention yet Alex Kipman. gets a much bigger role. So Panos, I feel like, kind of made a lateral move. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but Kipman gets a bigger role here. So he is now running a new team called AI Perception and Mixed Reality. So he keeps HoloLens, but he picks up a ton of other stuff that used to be research that is now being commoditized. So anything that is a perception service, right? So voice, machine vision, a lot of the, What else did he get? He got core cloud services for third parties on Azure. He gets ambient intelligence. He gets a whole bunch of stuff that was formerly under Harry Shum. Now,
did he get ultimate extras? Because I'm still waiting for that to happen.
He did not get ultimate extras. but he, like, speech, vision, machine, mixed reality, all those things. Alex Kipman now, who is working for Scott Guthrie at the highest level, right? And working still as a dotted line report to Harry Shum, who runs AI and research. So, yeah, that's an interesting combination of things under Alex Kipman. You
know, we should talk a little bit about the IoT bit. When Microsoft failed at mobile, you know, we had on the record conversations with various people over there about what this meant for the company and how they would recoup from that. And, you know, the thing we kept hearing about was this notion of we missed this wave being the mobile wave. And we want to make sure we don't miss the next wave. And, you know, Microsoft unfortunately has a bad habit of speaking of everything as the next wave. You know, they talked about mixed reality was the next wave for a little while. I think Windows 10 on ARM was the next wave. I'm probably missing some things. But I was just looking over their stuff about intelligent cloud and intelligent edge, and it occurred to me, this is the next wave. This is it. It's this notion of pervasive computing that today we kind of stick these little speaker things in our house and we talk to them. But the future of this stuff is that those little speakers and sensors are just kind of everywhere. Maybe they're in light switches, light bulbs, whatever. They're everywhere. They're not just in our house or out in the world. And they recognize a voice and we get access to our services wherever we are. That, you know, that's kind of the future. It's natural user interaction, whether it's voice or gestures or whatever. And, you know, this is a place, actually, when you think about the expertise that Microsoft has been building around AI and machine learning and cloud data centers, This is a place where they could actually make a difference, and this is a viable mass market that leapfrogs the size of mobile in the same way that mobile leapfrogged the size of the PC. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I don't mean it like that, but this is very potentially it. And so I wrote that story yesterday, and then coincidentally or not, today Microsoft just announced a $5 billion investment in IoT.
Yep.
And I suspect they didn't say this explicitly, but they talked about some events coming down the road where they would be talking more about this. The Build is obviously the next one, and I think Ignite might be the next one after that. But I suspect we're going to hear a lot more about that stuff and its potential future, you know, with regards to Microsoft.
This is...
We need a giant whiteboard with a big org chart so we can, like, cross people out and put them in
Leo,
boxes.
Leo, could we rename the podcast to Windows IoT Core Weekly?
With a little mixed reality nice thrown rhyme. In.
Yeah. Yeah, Windows Mixed Reality Weekly.
How about Mixed Weekly?
Yeah.
That'd cover everything.
Mixed Weekly.
Mixed Grill Weekly.
Mixed Up Weekly.
Mixed Up Weekly. So, so their hardware, do you think Microsoft will start making IoT hardware? No.
No.
That's an interesting question, though.
I mean, if that's going to be a big market.
Yep.
There's a little hint about this in Todd Bishop. I should have put this in the notes. Todd Bishop interviewed Harry Shum this week, who runs AI and research. And so Harry Shum said, you know, the way we just orged, it's going to be interesting to see some new first-party experiences using our AI capabilities. And I'm like, so he's not saying Surface.
Yeah,
but he's saying hardware.
Like a Harman, another Harman Kardon style Invoke.
Well, remember, you know, the Alan Kay thing. If you're serious about software, you make your own hardware. And we sort of took that fairly literally, like you have to make a laptop or a phone or something. Right. What we've seen over the past couple of years is that all of the big platform makers, Microsoft, Google, Apple, have all done this. And I don't know about Amazon in the cloud, but maybe. But certainly those three have created not like computers, but chipsets, you know, that are very specifically designed in many cases to do AI, neural network, machine learning type things. And, you know, Apple puts them in their phone. Microsoft has them up in the data center. Google has them up in the data center and actually in their phone, too. So, and they all have specialty chips. And so is it possible that they could do that on the IoT level, I would say, yeah, sure. I don't know anything about it, but it's certainly possible.
They're also building their own chip for the HoloLens, the new AI chip that's going to be in the next HoloLens, right? So you can call the HoloLens an IoT device, and that actually makes sense, right?
Yeah, yeah. And actually, they have custom chips in the Surface Pro and Surface Book too, so sure.
Right. So, yeah. I actually was looking on the Microsoft job site the other day for hardware jobs. There are quite a few hardware jobs at Microsoft.
Interesting.
Yep. Looking for a job.
The hardware jobs website.
Yeah. You know, I saw one for signal analyst, and I'm like, you know what? There I am right there.
Signal analyst. Nice.
Signal
like
analyst.
I'm getting a weird radar ping from Cupertino.
Signal analyst. Well, that's an interesting job title. I guess if you are one, you know what that means, but...
I think it's about using the signals from the IoT devices and kind of how those
it's kind of a networking
transmit information back to the cloud.
Oh, interesting. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
A sensor monitor.
Oh. Yeah.
My friend worked at a gas station, and on his resume, he put petroleum exchange expert.
That's good. That's good. Yes. All right. Well, I mean, I do think IoT might offer some really interesting opportunities for Microsoft.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, because it is the other part of that equation.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can have all the stuff you want in the cloud, but it has to hit something.
Right. And maybe even as important as mobile in some sense.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I mean. In other words, if you look at the scope of the potential market there, it's much bigger than mobile, actually.
It is. I spend more
because we all have
one.
We have one mobile phone.
Right. Many.
We're
going to
have hundreds of sensors around our houses. Right. So if you think about what mobile did to the PC, maybe IoT could do this to mobile.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting.
IoT pick of the week. I can see it now.
Right. Well, the Arduino add-on of the week Barry Jones.
One of the people we work with who's extremely smart has made her career in IoT. She picked her beat as IoT, Stacey Higginbotham.
Stacey,
I think that's
Stacey
actually,
and IT.
Yeah, very smart.
Or IoT, sorry. Yeah. That's actually one of the few I read her stuff.
Yeah, it's really good. And she's, she was always a super good reporter at GigaOM. And but she was a more general reporter, and now she says, if I'm going to do my own thing, I'm going to pick one.
I made the mistake by I chose the Kindle ebook reader as my thing.
Ebooks, they're going to be big.
It's just as a standout.
That was the dumbest April Fool's story I read. There were very few of them this year, thank God. But somebody did one that said that Apple was going to announce an e-reader.
Sure.
It was supposed to be announced at the education event and
Stephen King was going to run for mayor of Maine.
Mayor of Maine is a good job. It's kind of a sinecure, but
it's a Foursquare title.
Yeah, mayor of Maine. I used to be the mayor of Machu Picchu. I think I mentioned that. Lost it though in a tough runoff.
Well, you
got to
go back, Leo. You can't just go once.
I went twice. I thought for sure I was going to be able to get it on my second time. I got it the first time and lost it. And I thought, well, if I go back,
right?
But somebody who works there or something probably
like an Indian guide of some kind.
I hate that. Yeah. You shouldn't be allowed to check in Foursquare if you work at the place. Yeah.
Wow.
Actually, this is such a silly
conversation. This is the worst thing that's ever happened to social media.
Because nobody does it anymore.
It's just the most unfair.
You can be a mayor anywhere now because everybody's abandoned it.
Yeah.
Yep. I should go around just becoming mayor of everything. And there's probably a pretty good shot that I would never, ever lose my title. Because
you wouldn't.
Right.
You should just pick a favorite restaurant and become the mayor of that place and then point it out to the owners so you got free stuff every
time. Doesn't work. Been there. Tried that. Got zip.
Yep.
This isn't the only reorg change. Have we covered all of them? You mentioned Kipman. Cortana and Bing are staying with AI and research. That's Shum.
Yeah. Some of the stuff that's more ready to be commercialized in AI are now moved under Scott Guthrie, AI and Cognitive Services Platform. So things like the cognitive services and the bot framework stuff, that's starting to show up in Scott Gu's org now too. So, yeah. And this was a weird one to me. Store and commerce platform. So the Microsoft Store and the commerce platform are going under Scott Gu, which is kind of interesting. I guess because Windows engineering is there. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Maybe.
They, God, I, What do you think? They have like a war room, and they have like magnetic placards for every employee and every division, and they have a big
board. On a map.
Yeah, or maybe they do. Maybe they use the patent pushers with and then they push people into different orgs.
Topographical map of the Redmond campus.
I know. Some of these you got to wonder about because you're kind of like, huh, that's okay. Like, I can see where this fits, but why is this there, right?
I'm sure there are entire university programs designed around this kind of management theory and how you organize your teams and all of this stuff. And whoever's doing this no doubt has studied it.
Yeah, sure. For sure.
It's not something you just kind of throw a dart at the wall. Maybe it is. I don't know.
Maybe. You know, it's funny. The thing Microsoft wanted everyone to take away from the reorg was that they are the intelligent cloud, intelligent edge company, and that the biggest changes that happened were on the AI front. But of course, what people who know the company wrote was Windows just got blown up. And
a little more important. Just a little more important.
Yeah, it's like we just dropped a nuclear bomb, but look at this cute little flower over here.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, why don't you pay attention to that? It's cute. Yeah,
didn't fool me. Didn't fool us. Okay.
Okay. It's been a tough
week.
There
you have it.
Is that the entire gist of it now? Are we...
I think we have most of the high points.
One more thing I would say is if you're somebody who pays attention to Microsoft, the two names who haven't been household names who you should start paying attention to are Rajesh Jha, who is the new owner of the combined, Microsoft part of the Windows platform and Office 365, and Jason Zander, who's been the corporate vice president in charge of Azure, but now he gets Windows Server engineering too. So he's kind of a big deal now in our world, and so we're probably going to hear more about him.
The Jason Zander bit makes sense to me. I don't know Rajesh at all, and I, based on my understanding of how he deals with the press, I will not get to know him.
No, we probably won't.
You know, the Jason Zander bit, or I should just call it the Azure bit, really, is interesting and I think apropos because, as Mary Jo knows, over the years, the core of Windows development has kind of gone back and forth between the server and the client teams. Mm-hmm. You know, Snofsy stole it back from server when he took power. And it going back
then server
to what
took
is now
it
the,
back.
Yeah, then they took it back. And I think it going to Azure is the logical conclusion of this, right? It makes sense in the sense that those are the adults and, you know, they should be working on that part of the operating system. It's good.
I mean, having one engineering team makes a ton of sense for Windows and Azure together. I feel like why this wasn't a thing before is kind of unusual, but there you go.
Yeah, so... You know, having one experienced team across all the different Windows products makes no sense at all. And so, they're not doing that. That's okay. But this is good. I mean, we won't do this today. We don't have enough time. But, I mean, there are interesting debates to be had about whether maybe not there should be consumer and business versions of Windows that are separate. I think you could make a case, the application compatibility could be the same, but the user experience could be completely different. We could have emojis and other nonsense over here on the consumer side. Then I could run the business version and not have to worry about the Mickey Mouse game that for some reason is included in Windows 10 these days. that would be nice. So that's a possibility. But anyway, bringing the core of Windows to the Jason Zander's team, to me, good. That makes sense.
All right, let's take another break. just in Facebook now says, that Cambridge Analytica thing, it wasn't 50 million. Might have been 87 million people.
Oh, boy.
Maybe 87 million. It's so funny.
Is it all the people?
It's all the people. It's all the freaking people.
Can we disagree it's all the people?
And if it isn't, it might as well have been.
Yeah.
Maybe it was. Why does this always happen? Equifax. Maybe it was a few more.
Maybe one or two.
Maybe more. Maybe we got that number wrong. It's every time. Target. Yeah, maybe it was a little more than that.
I'm gonna start a personal website and get off Facebook. I think I'm just gonna post pictures of my kids when they were babies. It was just like a happier time.
I really think actually the antidote to Facebook is WordPress. Oh, look at this. WordPress.com is a sponsor. Who'd have thunk it? Nice timing, Paul.
Yep.
But it's really true. I finally went back and forth on killing my Facebook page because it is a point of presence, right? Everybody has, you know, there was a Leo Laporte page as well as my, you know, personal page. And I, that, you know, that goes away too. But then I realized, no, I got a better way to do this. Just like what you said, Paul, I think you were joking, but it's true. If you have your own website, you control it. You put your stuff there. Nobody's snooping on you. If you're a business, you really can't rely on a Facebook page. There's too many cases of businesses just being booted off for no reason. You can't let the future of your business rely on a Facebook or Twitter account. You need to have a website. You need to have a website just because you need to have a website. It's like you need to have a phone. You need to have a presence, a place where people – I don't care if you're a plumber or you're selling aluminum siding door to door. You need to have a place where when you give people your card or tell people your name – they can go online and look. I don't do business with people that I can't go find out more about them on their website. So now you got to look at making a website. And I know the reason you haven't, if you haven't. See, I don't have the time. It's too complicated. I don't want to become a web expert. You don't need to. WordPress.com makes it easy. You don't need to do coding. You don't need to do design. They give you everything you need to get your site up and running. And it's not some funky site builder software that makes every site look the same. No, they have hundreds of gorgeous templates with lots of functionality built in. It's very easy to set up a site, press a button, start a site, and then customize it. Really, you want to focus on the content. You want to put stuff on there that engages people and gets people to notice you and gets people to share. Because this is one of the nice things. With WordPress.com, you also get built-in social sharing and SEO. So people can, you post an article, the 10 things you need to know when you hire a plumber. If you're a plumber, you should have that article on your site. You should write it. And number 10 should be hire me. Or something. I don't know, maybe more subtle, but get the idea. Your customers, your readers can now click a button, share it onto Facebook, share it on Twitter. That's really even better because that's word of mouth advertising. That's them telling other people, hey, this is the guy I use. That's how it works. By the way, they have complete e-commerce solutions too, ranging from a simple and effective buy button to a complete online store. Don't go to some third party and, you know, glue it onto your site. You can actually have it in the site, integrated in. Plans start at WordPress.com as little as $4 a month. Everything is built in. They even have specialized plugins. By the way, my personal site, leolaporte.com, of course, it's on WordPress.com. And I use, there's various plugins I use. They have the best comments spam filtering tool anywhere, Akismet. Of course, I have that turned on. But also, I have the AMP plugin turned on. So my site loads like this and mobile. Things like that. They're just automatic. HTTPS, so it's a secure site, which improves your Google ranking. 30% of all websites run on WordPress. I don't mean 30% of all the websites in Petaluma or 30% of all the people I know or 30% of all the websites in the world. Almost a third of all the websites in the world are running on WordPress. There's a reason for that. It's the best. WordPress.com. Start today. 15% off any new plan purchase when you go to WordPress.com/windows. That'll also let them know you heard it here, which is good for Paul and Mary Jo. WordPress.com/windows. Create your website, get 15% off a brand new site, and have your own thing. You know, that's the best thing to do. I tell kids, teenagers, this too. Both my kids, you know, have a website that's theirs, not a Tumblr, not a Twitter, a website, because that's, if you don't put your reputation out there, somebody else will do it for you. So you have to do this. If you've got a young person, a teenager, a high schooler, they're sharing everywhere and stuff. This is a good antidote to that. Say, hey, you know what you really ought to do is make your own website. So that's what shows up when people search your name is your stuff, the stuff that looks makes you look good. All the best of you right there. You need to do that. WordPress.com/windows. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly and for making my site look great. All right. Just as we began, another update.
Yeah.
So have you probably haven't had a chance to even look at it at this point. Have you?
No. Well, plus it's a skip ahead build, meaning it's for RS5, which is the version coming out in the fall. So I'm not going to look at this now, but they did add a bunch of sets features. If you're into that kind of tabbed windows thing.
I saw a demo of that on somebody put it up on Twitter. It looked good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. They, well, I'm not sure if this is an navigational issue per se. Remember, I was talking about the Mac and Alt-Tab and you know, how navigation was a little weird, you know, as you go between platforms. You know, when you add the ability to add tabs to any windows in Windows, how do you navigate between those applications, right? And so I don't know if they were supporting, I guess it would be Control-Tab. I'm not sure what they did. But in this build, they've added the ability to Alt-Tab between all of them. So even though they're grouped in a tabbed set in a single window, you can still Alt-Tab between the various open windows and applications. And that might actually be the right way to do it. That mm-hmm. sounds like it makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm. And there's also a fix in this new build to Calculator. They had some weird thing going on with perfect squares, yeah. getting the root of perfect squares. I don't know, but they fixed
You're
it.
You're a perfect square. You nerd.
That seems like that should be a pretty straightforward thing. Here's one of the tab features. I'm not sure what I'm looking at here. But
this is the ability to open new tabs in File Explorer. So you can do Control T to open a tab. You can drag and drop them in and out.
Oh, I like being able to drag a folder to a tab. That's nice. Like that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So that's not for the next, whatever we're calling it, 1803. That's for 1809.
Let's call it 1803. I like that name.
I like 1803 as well. So, anything new to say about 1803?
Yeah, so I don't remember exactly where we were last week, but I want to probably 17.133.1 as it just rolls right off the lips. I think it hit fast ring. 3 days later, hit the slow ring. We have not seen an ISO release. That will come probably in the next few weeks at some point. The expectation is that in some capacity starting on Tuesday, which is Patch Tuesday, there'll be some availability of this thing. And then, you know, Microsoft begins deploying it over some period of time. You know, we'll see. We'll see exactly when. But it's going to be soon, I would say. Mm-hmm. I haven't tried this, but I think it was Neo Nguyen wrote a story about how you could actually join the Insider program today on your PC. And instead of choosing to do active development of Windows, which would let you choose between fast and slow ring, you could choose just to get bug fixes, or I forget the way they word it, but it's the other one, like bug fixes and new apps and things.
Oh, yeah.
And if you get that, if you're in that, you might actually get 1803 sometime in the next couple of days as it's kind of primed out to Windows update. So that one I can't verify, but that makes a certain amount of sense. Basically, we're transitioning here between the previous development track and the next one, and the added layer of complexities that they have skip ahead now. So, I guess there's the currently supported versions. There's the one that's about to be currently supported, and then there's the one that's, you know, further down the path.
Please forgive me for asking, but is does this thing have a name?
Not yet.
I mean, the only it is. So we had that discussion last week. As far as like the name of the update, no. I mean, it was codenamed RS4 Redstone 4 the entire time it was being developed. They never came out with like a "this is the spring update" kind of name. It is Windows 10 version 1803. I think that's the most accurate way to state it. Presumably, at some point, they will announce.
They don't need a name. I think they're saying now we don't need a name. They're saying we don't need a name. It's just the spring update, the usual, you know.
I would like to see them not have a name.
Yeah. Why need a name? Just I know. It's you have to distinguish it between a Patch Tuesday update, I guess. Feature update, our spring feature update.
I should look at this. Now that I have some timeline data, I wonder how good this is. I have no timeline data. I reset my computer. never mind. So I was going to say, I think we talked about this last week, but, you know, this release is not particularly major in the sense that there's only that one giant new feature,
right?
Which is timeline, which most people probably won't even see, frankly.
Right.
There's a kind of a spit shine thing going on with the Fluent system where you get acrylic and reveal feature,
blurry.
Which is
more blurry stuff.
I like blurry. It, but I mean, you know, whatever. There's more of that, and then
it's really not
kind of it.
Is there a lot under the hood?
No, what there is a lot of little things. Okay. You know, you could probably pick out
it's a polish update.
There may be more enterprise stuff, but I can't seem to get any information on what's in there for the enterprise, except for what we know around Windows Defender Application Guard. There's some things with WSL, the subsystem for Linux, but
I like that there are no new enterprise features because it proves that Microsoft still cares about consumers.
Oh, look at you.
See what I just did?
This is the no spin zone, Paul. I'm going to have to ding you for that.
I don't have the gong out. I was going to try to have a gong-free show today, and so far, so good.
Yeah.
No at gongs. Some point, you need to just hurl it at me like a discus. It just like sticks to the side of my head.
All right, good. No news is good news, and we'll probably get it next Tuesday in time for the show next week. Although not as usual, these are rolled out, staged rollouts, and so most people won't get it Tuesday.
But what I want to see is the ISO, because I want to do a clean install, and I'm curious because remember we had that question about the new privacy controls and those screens.
All
right. Right.
What's that going to look like?
Would I try to reset that to people? Get an ISO, do a full clean install?
You know, honestly,
how often do you do that?
You don't really need. I do it a lot because I'm an idiot. But there are so many good ways to, kind of reset Windows these days, right? This stuff is built into Windows 10. You really only need to go to the web and get the ISO if for some reason something's broken and you can't use the tools that are built in, or maybe a new version just came out and what you want to do is blow it away from space and not do the whole upgrade and then reset later kind of thing. I mean, for the most part,
those reset commands are really good. The recovery.
Yeah, and it's really kind of fundamentally changed the way we view how this works. Remember,
I agree.
For many years, you couldn't even download a Windows 7 or Windows 8.1. Actually, you can't anymore either. ISO, right? I mean, these were things that were just never generally made available. But by putting it into the operating system, you know, I had a problem resetting this computer. You can reset this from, I have like four different ways to do this off the top of my head. I mean, using the software built into Windows, using the software that's built into the recovery environment, which is outside of Windows, using a Windows 10 recovery disk, which is that recovery environment on a USB key, or using the Windows 10 ISO installed USB key. They all kind of do the same thing. The process is slightly different on each one, but basically, there's a lot of options. I mean, there's no reason not to be able to bring a Windows 10 computer up if you run into problems.
I guess you're right. However, you were talking about the ISO. How long does it typically take before there's an ISO version of a big update?
I can't remember the exact thing. So I want to say it's going to be within the next couple of weeks, but I don't remember exactly. Oh, I also want to see how the other thing is, if you download the ISO today, you get a choice of the different Windows 10 product conditions, right? And so today it says Windows 10S, Windows 10 Home, Windows 10 Pro, Windows 10 Enterprise, and I think there's a couple of event editions and maybe some other things. With this version, what it will show is Windows 10 Home in S mode, Windows 10 Home, Windows 10 Pro in S mode, Windows 10 Pro. Mm. You know, I mean, wouldn't it be interesting if S mode was the only option, right? So that you had to actually install S mode and then switch after the fact. Oh, wow. Maybe.
What does it do in 17133, the one that we call RTM?
We don't have an ISO for it. That's what we're saying.
Right.
In other words, we don't have that's the thing we don't have.
Oh, so you wouldn't know just by installing
that's
the
what I'm waiting
developer.
For. This is what I want to see because this is an interesting piece of the puzzle. You know, what does that look like?
I know. I also want to see, again, when you and Brad wrote that story about what's coming next for Windows 10, you guys mentioned a Home Advanced version of Windows 10, and I'm curious if that shows up somewhere.
Yeah, right. So will Windows 10 Pro Workstation be in there? I don't believe it's in the list today. I mean, I know you can upgrade in the product. I don't think so.
Yeah, because you can get it from the store, right?
Yeah, and if you
upgrade,
if you'd already done it, I'm sure you could go back to the store and it would just say install. And it's maybe Windows 10 Home Advanced will be the same thing.
Mm.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. This is what I'm waiting to find out.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. I was getting excited looking at the new Dell 15, XPS 15, which is going to offer the new ninth generation Intel processor. It's going to offer a 1050
NVIDIA chip. Beautiful.
But instead of doing that, Leo, consider this. You can buy a Surface Studio with a two-generation-old chipset.
Yeah.
And it still costs $4,200. So, I mean, just as throwing it out as an alternative.
I love the Surface Studio, man. I love it. But I really wouldn't want a game on it.
I know. And that should be an amazing game machine. You know?
It really should be.
I hope the next one will get there, right?
I see Samsung as a new one. It's with the eighth generation. But these new Core i9s, you want to talk about them at all? Or
just briefly. I mean, you know, the eighth generation Intel chipsets are apparently a generation that is occurring over several generations. And so,
I know, it's so weird.
I don't really hate the way they've done this. But with the Core i9, which they had announced, when did they announce it? Back at CES maybe or before CES? So the first laptop-based i9 systems are shipping. And so we know last fall they moved to quad-core for the U-series chips. Now what they have is six-core. How do we say six in was it hexa-core?
Hexa-core.
What's the term?
Good. I like that. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is Intel really kind of redefining what performance means on a portable computer because, frankly, for the type of stuff I do and Mary Jo does and most people do, I'm sure like a dual core U-series chip is fine. It works great. Mm-hmm. Quad core, I'll take it. It's amazing. It doesn't hurt the battery life. And then it's like hexa core, whatever the term is. It's insanity. And, you know, this is basically a portable workstation class chipset. And so this is, I feel like Intel's just flinging mud. AMD, you know, like, yeah, go ahead. We heard you had a little performance story. You're cute.
Is it wrong of me to salivate and want these? Is that
feeling to be normal, Leo. Okay.
I don't really need them, you know. But
nope, no, don't need it.
I
understand the want.
I look at it and I go six, mm-hmm. six cores.
It's like you just want to leave Task Manager up and watch it like a TV station.
Yeah. Are any of these out yet, or they've all been announced? I think
they've all been announced. Yeah. This is kind of curious timing, though, isn't it? Is there? Am I missing something? Is there a hardware event that happens on April 1st every year? I mean, what is the what's the timing of this? It's really kind of strange.
Is it because no? I was going to say Game Developer Conference. That already happened.
Well, I'm just going to backstep this a little bit. They did announce the Core i9 previously. Maybe this is the type of thing where they had announced this stuff at CES and I wasn't paying a ton of attention. And now, you know, those CES devices come out over time and now we're hitting the high end.
I'm going to guess you want to get them out. You want to get them out now so that they can be in computers selling in June. Mm-hmm. So, and that's for the September back to school season.
And dads and grads, all that stuff. Right.
So I think June is a time when you want to get stuff out in the market. Oops. So I think that this announcement is probably for a June. Mm-hmm. You can pre-order the Dell on April 16th. They didn't say when you'd get it, but probably, you know, May, mid-May.
Yeah, January 2019.
I got to think these things are hot. I think they're 100-watt parts.
Oh, geez, really? That's awesome. So the power brick's going to be like the size of this box. It's going to be like a this gigantic thing, you know.
Dell's putting a 97-watt-hour battery in it, which is you can't. I think could you not take that on a plane? What is the limit? Maybe it's 100.
Absolute. I think that's over the limit. I think
90 is the limit.
Oh wow!
I think it is too. I think it's under 100.
Well, if it's just between us, we won't tell.
Well, I mean, but that thing's going to go through screening, right? What is this thing? It looks
just like an XPS 15. What am I looking at?
You know.
Yeah. There's must be a monster battery in that thing.
Hmm. It's interesting.
Plane is 100 watts, by the way, so that's why it's 97. It's right under 100.
What are the shipping limits? What are the shipping limits on batteries? Because the other day I brought something to FedEx and they were like, "What kind of battery is in this?"
They
because
always ask about
I don't think
batteries.
We can ship it.
You at least have to put a label on it. I know everything I get now with lithium ion has a label on it.
Yeah. Imagine you're a PC maker, they got to ship pallets of these things. How does that work?
I know.
You know.
That's what I wondered.
Is it like a lead container in case it explodes out in the highway?
I don't know.
A bunch of Samsung devices go up in flames like on I-95 somewhere.
I just thought it was odd. I was like, I don't know.
Yeah. They always, they ship a lot of electronics and it's always a question. Mm. Did you remove the battery? No, I wish I could. You can't do that anymore. I'm surprised you guys don't know that.
I love it. The Dell Alienware, they're going to overclock the i9 to over 5 gigahertz, right? It's not hot enough.
Awesome.
Let's see how hot we can get this gigahertz. Sucker. Let's
right.
see if it can actually melt
It's so
the
fast,
case.
The chip itself actually makes a whiny sound when it's running.
Dogs come running.
Is it screaming? What is that?
5 gigahertz.
We finally found a machine that can play PUBG at acceptable frame rates.
All right. I'm going to take a little break, and you can get prepared because it's almost time for the back of the book. My favorite part of the show where Mary Jo recommends beer and Paul recommends gaming and fight. It's the leisure time segment of the show. But first, a word from our sponsor, Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Quicken Loans, the biggest, the best lender in the country. If it comes time to get a home loan, you got to go to Quicken Loans and see what for a refi too. You got to see what's out there. And as long as you're going to use Quicken Loans, you got to use this new thing they've just announced, Rocket Mortgage. Well, not just. I think actually maybe now. Now it's been around for a while, right? We've been talking about it since it came out. Rocket Mortgage is an entirely online mortgage approval process. I love that. I don't have to go to the bank. I don't have to fill out paperwork. There's no paperwork involved at all. You just go to rocketmortgage.com/windows, answer a few questions. They have trusted partnerships with all your banks, all the financial institutions. So all they do, you give them permission, they go and they get the information they need. They're not going to hassle you for it. You don't have to find a fax machine and send them pay stubs from 8 years ago. No, they do the whole thing. They crunch the numbers, and based on your income, your assets, your credit, they make you an offer. They tell you which loans you qualify for. You choose the term, the rate, the down payment, and you're approved. And all this took less than 10 minutes. You could do it at an open house. You could do it right now. Before the show's over, you'd have a loan. I love this. They put a big green button on there, say, you're approved. So you can show that to the realtor and say, I'd like to make an offer. But they also have a button that says print a letter. If your realtor is still back in the old days, you can also print a letter of approval. And we'll have that for you too. Rocketmortgage.com/windows. It's simple to apply. There, you'll understand exactly what's going on every step of the way. They explain it. They tell you, here's what's happening next. And then you'll mortgage confidently because you'll know you got the best deal for a home loan, for a refi, for your first home or your 10th. Actually, I think people who've done this before the old way, like I have, will appreciate this even more. You youngsters, you'll go, well, of course, that's easy. It should be easy. But the rest of us know. No, it's not. It wasn't. RocketMortgage.com/windows. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. And MLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. Get over there now, even if you don't have a house in mind. If you're house hunting, get over there now and get it started. Set up the account so that you can get that loan, like, boom. And I have to tell you, being pre-approved for a mortgage makes it a lot easier to get a house. Let this old timer tell you. That puts you right at the front of the line. RocketMortgage.com/windows. We thank Quicken Loans for their support of Windows Weekly. And now we go to Paul Thurrott. Wait a minute. There's no tip or pick in here. It's just beer.
Yeah, we kind of truncated it, but I will.
I was just saying, I love this part of the show. And you,
I know. I, as you said that, I'm like, wow, we just disappointed Leo because we knew the reorg talk would go long. But I will just point out, because it is the beginning of April, that
Games with Gold.
Be sure to look at the Xbox Games with Gold Games thing because, Gold. A, it is awesome this month.
Oh, good.
And B, it is awesome this month. So there's a game called The Witness, which is a lot like the game Firewatch, which I loved. It's beautiful looking.
I remember you talking about Firewatch.
Assassin's Creed game. And then Dead Space 2 is coming in the second half of the month.
That's a great game. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
That's a fun game.
This is one of the best months in a long time.
I played Sea of Thieves for a couple of hours, and I got seasick.
Yeah. That's amazing.
That's how authentic it is.
That's actually amazing.
I really got queasy. I said, oh, and I haven't played it since.
That's funny. So the boat really, it's like kind of moving around.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Oof. <That's funny. laughs>
It's an interesting game. I'm sure it's if you knew what you were doing, it would be more fun. They don't give you really much prologue. You just launch you right into it.
Yeah.
But it's fun. It's really a cool game. I really like the idea, but yeah, I got queasy.
You like it despite the fact that it's not Call of Duty? That's interesting.
Well, it's really No Man's Sky for the ocean. Yeah, you spend a lot of time.
Which, by the way, is coming to the Xbox.
Yeah, I saw that. So you can be bored on the Xbox, too, now.
That's right. Exactly. It's feature parity, Leo. That's all we care about.
Very important. As long as it looks as good. well, let's you know what? I agree. We need, and frankly, because I was running late, I didn't have breakfast. So thank goodness Mary Jo Foley's got a beer pick.
I was going to say, you know, in deference to Terry, maybe I could have my first beer in like 16 months.
Yeah, toast.
I think you should.
Toast one to Terry.
Yeah.
Sure.
Right. We're pouring one out for Terry in this beer pick. Founders KBS. They do it every year. It's Kentucky Breakfast Stout, and the newest batch is just out, the 2018.
I know you like this because I think you picked it last year, right?
I think I did. Yeah. So last week we had a spring beer pick, but it's time to go back to winter because we've had snow out here, out east, and Lord. It feels like kind of a Windows winter after last week's announcement. So if you do want one last winter beer pick, this is a really great one because it's aged in bourbon barrels with chocolate. It tastes like chocolate and vanilla and coffee and bourbon all mixed together in a delightful swill.
Oh, jeez. No. Swill, by Alrighty. Swill, you don't mean pig slop. You mean a beverage. Yes.
I do.
Yes.
Yeah. I just got to try it yesterday. It's on tap at Rattle, or it was anyway. It's 11.8%.
It wasn't
it's
not until Mary a light Jo showed up beer. And drank all of it.
I know. I'm like, oh, Windows Weekly. Yeah. 11.8%, not light. You're not going to drink a lot of these.
It must be confusing for people walking a Rattle and for the first time in their lives and have no idea what's going on.
You should see people. It's hilarious because they hand them this. They hand them a beer menu with 40 beers on it, and they're like, yeah, which beer do you want? You know, people usually are like Bud Light.
Right.
Oh, so what I meant was more along the lines of, I was standing, we were taking pictures of people in a bar one time, and this woman leaned into me. She goes, are you guys famous? And I said, no. Oh, yeah. No, we're not.
Is that because when you go in, everybody knows your name, and they go, hey, Paul. Hey, Mary Jo, come on over. Have a seat.
I mean, Mary Jo lives there. It's her second home.
Yeah.
It's our cheers. It's our cheers. Yeah. They know you too, Paul. They all know you too.
No, I know.
This sounds really
good. KBS.
Why is it around for winter, though? I mean, I think you could drink that year-round, couldn't you?
You could, although like a bourbon barrel one is kind of on the heavier side and kind of gives me a feel of winter. I don't know if I'd drink it in the summer, but I'm sure you
would drink it in Spain. You know,
No, you're right. That makes sense. You want a lighter beer, a wheat beer or something in the winter. Yeah,
I think so.
I mean, the summer. Okay. Well, thank you for cutting through the clutter and explaining everything that's going on at Microsoft. I think this is a good episode to listen to, folks. If you're just tuning in late, you want to go back and hear it from the beginning. Paul Thurrott at Thurrott.com. His book's at leanpub.com. That's where you'll get the newly updated Windows 10 field guide, including the new update, the spring creators update. Mary Jo Foley, she's at allaboutmicrosoft.com. That's her ZDNet blog. And we do this show every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. That would be 1800 UTC if you want to come by and say hi. Join us. You can be in the chat room too, irc.twit.tv. Talk back like the smart kids in the back of the class. If you want on-demand versions of the show, they're available at twit.tv/ww. That's the live, the lives at twit.tv/live. That's the on-demand version, twit.tv/ww. Audio or video, you can watch too. And we're, of course, everywhere you get your podcasts. So subscribe and you'll get every episode. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Mary Jo.
Thank you, sir.
Have a lovely week. I hope the spring comes to Lower Macungie Valley soon.
It's beautiful today. So, by the way, landed in Sunday, 62 degrees.
Nice.
Snowstorm on Monday.
Nice.
Yeah.
And today it's 62 degrees. The snow's gone.
And here it's supposed to snow Friday and Saturday.
Great. That's bizarre.
This is what the apocalypse looks like, by the way, in case you were wondering.
Wow.
Yeah. Right. Seriously, could spring just start and stay?
Have a great week. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.